Hello, mate. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm okay. I am currently sat directly in front of a radiator.
Oh.
I am effing roasted, but it's the place that I sit to do this. So it just, I'm just going with it. Just I remove my jumper and I'm sitting work ball.
What amazes me the most about that is that you've actually got the heating on.
Yeah, we get an hour and a half, hour and a half in the
Oh,
morning, an
okay.
hour and
It's
a half. I
rationed.
don't, and also, I've just noticed this is scaring the crap out of me. Have you ever seen the film on this on the iPlayer at the minute called Zoom?
No.
So it's a horror film filmed during COVID,
Yeah.
and all the people that are in it, so it's literally on Zoom, so on
What, they filmed it
laptops.
on Zoom?
Everything was filmed on Zoom
Oh,
when it just when it
okay.
first when Zoom was first a thing,
Oh,
and
yeah.
they're doing a seance, and
Oh.
somebody messes around with the seance, and then the woman that's running it says, "You shouldn't have taken the mick out of the spirits. Now they're going to be pissed," and weird things start happening.
Oh,
Now, if you
dear.
look over here.
Yeah. This is a very visual listener.
Yeah, just keeping up.
Oh, it
See
keeps
that?
flickering.
Yeah, it's
Oh.
freaking right out. It's just there, and I don't know why.
Oh. The gods are angry for some reason.
Yeah. Anyway, how's it?
Well.
Is your house move done?
Yes, been 4 weeks now. I think this is the first recording we've done in about 6 weeks, isn't it? But here we
Something
are.
like that.
We're in a new house. We've still got boxes, but in between our previous recording and this one, you actually came to visit. We
I
saw each
did.
other face to face.
I know. What's that
First
about?
time since the summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
It was good. I saw your new house and it's lovely.
yes, and we
You had only just
went.
moved in, you looked shattered.
You know, on I can't remember if I told you this at the time, but on my phone, it works out how many flights of stairs you climb up and down each day. And
Okay.
on the Friday that we moved, it registered 74 flights of stairs.
Brilliant. Well done.
That's a
That
lot. That's a lot of
is a lot.
stairs.
That's quite a lot to say.
I was exhausted. But yeah, when you came to visit us, and then you and I and our lovely wives went out for dinner.
We did.
So I'm
Nice
going to give a
little place.
shout out to Carmana Restaurant in Northampton, which
Yeah,
was
it was lovely.
absolutely fantastic, wasn't it?
And I had a lovely chat with one of the owners, which was
Yes, you
nice.
did.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
Yes.
he was interested in coming on, so hopefully we'll get that happening soon in the future. But it was
Yeah.
a lovely little vegan restaurant, and yeah, it was a good night. Good night out.
Yes. It was good. Lovely restaurant. Yeah. Good food. Awesome. So, well, how about our guest today?
Yeah,
Very
we've
special
been waiting a
guests.
while.
Yes, special guest who we've managed to get on, and I'm just going to leave it there because
Wow. Okay. It's been a bit of a backwards and forwards between ourselves and her, but we got there.
yes, we're there, and at this point we've recorded it already, so we know that she definitely turned up. So this would be
Yeah.
awkward if we were doing the intro and then she didn't turn up. But she
Yeah.
did, so it's all good. Yeah, so
Have a listen.
have a listen. Hope you enjoy it. If you do, tell us. If you don't, just keep it to yourself.
Don't tell us. Just scroll past and all that.
Yeah, scroll on, mate. Scroll on. So if you do like it, then come and find us on social media or email us, Wes.
Email. Yeah,
Ah,
that's it.
yes.
I remembered it. It's just you threw it at me, so it just feels a bit weird. So if you wanted to get in touch, if you wanted to send us a message, if you want to come on, if you have any comments about our podcast at all. You can email us at howivegapodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us, Jamie. I know it's taken a little while to get this sorted out, but we're here now. That's the main thing.
Thank you so much for having me and putting up with my shenanigans. I appreciate your patience with me.
No problem at all. So I'm going to do a little intro, if that's all right, and then we'll crack on. You happy with that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yep. Awesome. Okay. We have a very special guest today. You may have seen her recently gatecrashing the Coach event at New York Fashion Week. She's an activist, podcaster, influencer. She's worked with some of the biggest vegan organizations, PETA, VKind, Gen V, just to name a few, and is also starring in the new short film called The Next Girl, which is launching this autumn. Our guest is Jamie Logan. Welcome, Jamie.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. That was such a great coverage that you had going on there.
Excellent. What is there anything that I missed out?
No, you pretty much got everything that's okay, been in good. The recent months. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, just in the recent months. So I think I said that just at the start that we'd taken a while to get this organized. And I think one of the times when you cancelled on us, asked to rearrange, was actually on the day that you were jumping on the runway at the Coach show, wasn't it? I think.
I mean, Matthew, I told you it was for good reason.
It was a very good reason. I can pretty much guarantee.
Cheeky cow. She bailed on us.
It was. I could pretty much guarantee that coming on our podcast would not get you on the Daily Mail online, but hijacking the fashion show at New York Fashion Week definitely did that. So
I figured it would give us something to talk about.
That was the only reason.
That too.
Tell us how that came about then. What's the backstory?
Yeah, so I had obviously planned a podcast with you guys a few weeks before, and with these kind of disruptions, it's not always planned out too far in advance. You know, we get the opportunity and we do it. So with this particular action, I was approached by PETA about 4 or 5 days before the actual action happened. I didn't know where it would be. I didn't know the full logistics of it. Originally, I thought I was going to be the one that had the body paint over my chest that said Leather Kills, but then they decided to put me in the dress with a sign that said Leather Kills, and they had another girl named Sasha who was in front of me that was body painted as a skinned animal with lettering on her body that said Leather Kills. And so we got word of this action that it was going to happen, and I thought this is such a great chance and opportunity to speak up for the animals and speak up about what happens to animals in the name of fashion, really. And Coach is notoriously known for using animal skins, particularly leather. And so I was super excited about being able to bring this message to light. And I didn't really expect it to go as viral as it did, to be honest with you. It was shocking how many news outlets picked up on it, how Vogue Business was talking about the leather industry, how the term sustainability started coming up and people started talking about how unsustainable leather actually is. But really our message was just how cruel leather is. And just to kind of put this out there, is these are last resort actions. We don't just go and storm runways just out of the blue. These are last resort actions which have to happen when these companies don't take our numerous meetings with them seriously, when they decide to continue using animal skins and not change after being confronted with the information as to how animals are treated and killed in these industries, also how damaging it is to our environment. When they continue to just profit off of the backs of animals and our environment, we do take things into our own hands and we do crash runways.
So there were some proper famous people there, like Globe, like wasn't J-Lo there?
Oh yeah, it was J-Lo, Anna Wintour, Lil Nas, Dove Cameron. I mean, it was like everywhere I looked, it was a A-list celebrity. And that's why we were so afraid when we first pulled up to the event. We were like, there's just no effing way we're getting in here. because the only people entering those buildings are the heads of Vogue, are A-list celebrities, and then there's us. So
yeah, I was gonna
how did you get in?
Yeah, how on earth did
I mean, not that maybe happen? You don't want to give secrets away, I don't know, but how do you do it?
Well, I mean, a good magician never reveals their secrets. And of course, we want to keep crashing these shows. So I can't say too much about the logistics of how we got in. But what I can say is playing the part, looking the part, and researching a little bit beforehand does come in handy. But they change the location very last minute. So this is what they do because they want to avoid people like us. But We're too good. I'm like, we get in everywhere. PETA was actually at numerous fashion shows this fashion week. They managed to crash Michael Kors, Burberry, some shows in Milan, Hermes, protesting skins and exotic animals. So it's a much larger message than just leather. We're also talking just about using animals in general. And how cruel that is and how unnecessary it is in 2023, almost 2024, where we have next gen materials that are more sustainable, that are durable, that are fashionable. Like, why do we need to continue causing so much harm and destruction?
Absolutely. So like, I saw the video of the two of you walking around, and what struck me was that no one seemed to do anything. They just sort of like it was part of the show. Like, here's the next outfit. Someone like with body paint, like all their skin's been torn off, and someone carrying a sign behind them. But what happened next? Like, what happened after the end of the video?
So yeah, it was pretty shocking how we managed to get around three runways. Sasha, my friend, got around four. They tackled me first because I had the sign. And so, yeah, that was pretty, the security actually weren't the people that took us off. It was the creative directors. I think the security actually thought we were part of the show.
Brilliant.
That's even better.
There were some, yeah. And there were some comments on social media that was like, is this just a coach PR stunt? Like, we know what this is about. We know what's up. And I'm just like, wow. I mean, seriously, guys, I was like, we nailed it. We killed that one. But there's a lot of things that could go wrong in these type of actions. You know, I could have fallen, held the sign upside down. I mean, heck, we could have not gotten in. So
yes,
I was definitely happy with how it went. But Rachel, who was the videographer, and also she kind of took lead in directing us on when to get up. She's a expert, very seasoned activist that has done these kind of things before. And so working with her and then working with Sasha, the three of us are experienced in these kind of things. So I think that helped. But what happened after we were pulled off stage is I was fully expecting to spend the night in jail. I really was surprised when they grabbed me. The guy did tackle me a little bit like an NFL football player, but I'm like, wow, dude. Yeah, I'm like, seriously, like, I'm 115 pounds. Why are you, like, throwing me into a wall, you know? I'm like, I get it. So he really was pissed. So he grabbed me. And what bothered me was so many people commented about the tackle as opposed to the message. And I'm like, guys, 2 minutes of me being mishandled and taken outside is nothing in comparison to a whole entire life of a cow that is confined, is beaten, is ultimately killed for their skins. Mm. I mean, that is nothing in comparison to what I went through. So let's keep the focus on the message here. So the guy tackled me and then threw me outside, and he threw me to the security out there. And the security guards were like, What just happened? And it's like, you know, I look so innocent and sweet. And I just looked at the guy and I was like, I'm sorry. I had a little too much to drink. And so he walked me gently down the stairs and just was like, all right, have a good night. Are you going to call a cab? I was like, yeah, I got it. And I went across the street and I grabbed a margarita. But I was like, okay, this could not have gotten better. But then I was sitting in the bar and I was like, oh no, where is Sasha? Because she was taken outside to another entrance. So we didn't know what had happened to her. Rachel was with me at the bar and we were like, we need to find Sasha. Did they arrest her? What's going on? They just threw her outside the other entrance and she was just basically standing on the street outreaching people, which is so epic.
Brilliant.
straight into some street activism. Oh yeah,
and then next thing I know, we got back to the hotel, which is kind of where we were stationed, and we're starting to see major news outlets posting about this. The Cut posted a video which ended up getting, I think, 5 million views, or and some guy on Twitter posted something which last time I checked was at 12 million views, and it was just us walking, and people were commenting, which I thought was hilarious, about my walk. They seemed to like it. I'm not sure why, but thank you. I'm glad that the walk could help draw attention to the message on my side.
Yeah, that's it. Fantastic.
I'm like, I have no idea what I was doing, but you know, you play the part. I was like, all right, somebody's got to make Fashion Week interesting. So yeah, that's kind of, I tend to do bold actions that get people talking, that get the media to pick up on this stuff, because ultimately animals are dying and somebody needs to speak up for them. And sometimes while I do appreciate kind conversations, I have a lot of educational conversations on my YouTube channel with people, we also do need to take things to the next level at times and disrupt and really do these things to get the media's attention.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had a bit of a minor dispute with somebody I was working with a few months ago. He was saying, it was about Just Stop Oil, but he was saying how they need to stop doing this sort of activism stuff, because it's what's the point? And I had to call out every activist from history that's actually done something and made a difference. Mm-hmm. I said to him, if we don't do that level of activism, nothing's ever going to change.
Exactly.
And he still couldn't grasp it. You know, even if it is just getting it in the media, if that's what your activism's doing, you know, you've got activists still going to farms and rescue animals and go and do, what do you call it, when they go to the lorries before they go into the slaughterhouse. The vigils.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just if you're just getting a media presence, if you're just getting the noise out there, then crack on.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. That's I completely agree. I mean, this is a science. Like, if you look into sociology and you look at past movements, you look at the women's rights movement, you look at the civil rights movement. I'm actually currently reading Malcolm X's biography, and it's amazing. And we look at, what is that tipping point? How many people had to be on that same wavelength and understand the message before things actually started to change? And what were those actions that got us there? And I mean, sometimes violence was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate.
Is that Malcolm X's autobiography?
His autobiography, yeah.
That's an incredible book.
Yep.
I would be able to reach for it on my bookcase, but I moved house a few weeks ago and I haven't unpacked it yet. So it's in a box in the garage. So I can't.
Mm-hmm.
But
and,
great.
And
book.
I'm only in the beginning of it, but as he's introducing us to his family and the family dynamics and how many people in his family were killed by white men and people. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I can see how angry he was and how he had to use that anger to fuel his activism, but he wasn't necessarily promoting violence as people once thought he was. He was just kind of, as we were just saying before, trying to create change by any means necessary. And I do, in a sense, I relate to this sense of urgency and this, like, these high emotions, because after going to slaughterhouses and seeing these animals being beaten and have their throats cut, and, you know, it's like, how can I stand there and not be passionate and angry about it in a way? How can I not think about this all the time? Like, knowing that this is happening at every second of the day, every day. So.
Yes, absolutely. So talking of factory farming and slaughterhouses, tell us about The Next Girl.
Yeah. So The Next Girl is a film that I recently starred in, which tells the story of these young adolescent girls who are born into this dystopian world where their bodily autonomy is taken away from them. And they are forcefully impregnated. Their babies are taken away from them over and over again. And so ultimately, the goal with this film was to draw parallels to a certain industry that is currently existing what could that today. Be? What could it be? I don't know. You'll have to watch it to find out.
Yeah. Okay, good.
So it has this human trafficking vibe to it. And I think a lot of non-vegans are going to watch it and be drawn into it and not actually know until the end what this is, what's happening here. So that's yeah. So it was a really intense filming experience because I had to really prep for this role. Normally I do a lot more comedy and humorous thing, activism, and I try to bring light to my content. You know, I've done the vigils. I also post sad things, obviously, and I post slaughter footage, but me as a person, I don't know. It's hard for me to cry, you know, on command. I'm not. Yeah. So,
would you say you're trying to put the fun in fundamentalism?
Sure.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
So when I was first approached by Star Simmons, the producer of V-Kind, with this script, I read through it and I was like, wow, this is really intense, but I love the message in this. Let me think about this. So I thought about it and I was like, this has the potential to create so much impact. Like, I really want to do this. And so I worked for a couple weeks with an acting coach named Justina Adorno. She's amazing. She's an incredible actress and vegan. And she really helped to break down the script with me and like reconnect with some of like my triggers to help me actually get there to the depths of this role and to understand the character better. So we shot this past summer at a location called The Slaughterhouse in Arizona. And it was a slaughterhouse many years ago. Oh, they killed millions and millions of cows there. And so you could feel that energy walking in. Now it's actually like a Halloween tourist attraction. It just like has such a weird energy to it and people go there. It's like a spooky place. So we shot there for about a week. And most recently in LA, this last week, we just premiered it. And I was overwhelmed with the positive response about the film. My dad, who's not vegan yet, he watched it and he came out crying, bawling his eyes out. And I don't usually see my dad cry, you know. And he said to me, he's like, I need to make some serious changes. Like, that film really hit hard. Yeah. So I also just got a lot of feedback from vegans alike and non-vegans. And yeah, they seem to really connect with the message. And the film is already going around film festivals. Most notably, it got into Cannes World Film Festival, which is exciting. Yeah.
Wow. That's really cool.
Yes. I'm like, can I please go to the south of France? Will you fly me there? Q&A, anyone?
As long as you don't fly coach, you'll be fine.
Oh, absolutely not. No, usually I'm like in a middle seat, like falling asleep on someone's shoulder, drooling a little bit.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, that is really cool. So yes. It's a short film, isn't it? So what's the release of that going to be like? Is it just going to be around at festivals and that sort of film festivals, that sort of thing?
So anyone can actually watch it now. It's live on Unchained TV. That's the only place that it's premiere. It's it can be seen right now. But I think, you know, ultimately we want everybody to be able to see it. Like, this film isn't about necessarily getting huge distribution or anything. It's an educational film that will hopefully help people make the connection. So I think for now it's just going to be on Unchained, and then we're going to wait a little bit, premiere it at some film festivals, and then post it public, like on YouTube or maybe other streaming platforms. I'd love to get it on Amazon Prime if possible.
That'd be cool. That would give you so much exposure there, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Just put it on there for free, let people see it.
Awesome. Okay, well, things are definitely on the up.
I think it's just about being able to get creative with our approach. And as I said, you know, we do these type of disruptions. I also work on documentaries. That was kind of like my first start into the vegan movement. And I do educational content like Anonymous for the Voiceless Cubes, social media. I attend vigils. I do animal rescues, different protests. So, I mean, really mixing it up. And this film in particular was about getting this message across in a way that was creative and creating this. I mean, it's not, I was going to say a fiction movie, but it's almost not fiction. It's almost, I want to say, really, based on a true story. Yeah.
Yeah. Based on a story that happens millions of times around the world every day.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned there that documentaries was your route into veganism. So what's your vegan story? How did it all begin?
Yeah. So it all began for me when I was 13. I was in the car with my dog and I was visiting my grandparents in Indiana. And I'm from New York City. So seeing farm animals was a very rare occasion. The only time I really saw them was when they were dead on my plate. Mm-hmm. And so I was visiting my grandparents and we were driving somewhere, and out of the corner of my eye, I see this huge metal truck driving by, and I was looking and I remember just seeing these little snouts peering through, and it was a pig livestock truck. And I was sitting in the car with my dog, and I just remember looking back and forth at the two animals, looking at my dog and then looking at the pigs, and feeling uncomfortable knowing that my dog was coming home with me, going to get lots of cuddles and kisses, a warm dinner. And those animals were going to the slaughterhouse where they will meet their end. Mm-hmm. And that was a seed that was planted. And I think for a lot of us, you know, we weren't born vegan, and we certainly, it didn't go vegan overnight. At least I didn't. I commend the people that do, but for me, it was a process. And so that seed was planted. And from then on, I was like, I'm no longer eating any pork products, which I didn't really eat pig much anyway. So it was like a very easy thing to be like, no, I'm never eating that again. And then I came across some like cow slaughterhouse footage, maybe like a year or two later. And I was like, I'm never eating cows again. And then chickens. And then I learned about the fishing industry. And ultimately, I went vegetarian. And then finally, when I was 18, I was in London for winter break. I was visiting my friend Maria out there. And out there, like, I guess it was 6 years ago almost at this point, this girl that I met at this party was like, what's your New Year's resolution? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I kind of want to do something like, I don't know, go to the gym more. I don't know. And she was like, why don't you try going vegan for a month? There's this challenge called Veganuary. And I said, well, I'm already vegetarian. She's like, yeah, but I heard if you cut the dairy, you'll feel a lot better. So that's kind of where I was launched into it. Was I went on veganuary.com. I signed up. I said, for 30 days, I'm going to go vegan, but it probably won't last. And that was 6 years ago. And obviously, I never plan on going back. But it was one of those things where they sent me a ton of emails and recipes and information about what happens in the dairy and egg industries, and I was horrified. And so I became vegan at 18, and I want to say 4 or 5 months later, I visited my cousin Alexandra in San Francisco, and she was running some AV cubes out there, Anonymous for the Voiceless cubes, which are basically just forms of activism where you hold TV screens and you show people the standard practices of where food comes from. And mm-hmm. so I went and I held the TV screen, and I just remember looking at the faces of people walking by, and I just could see the wheels turning. And I felt in that moment, I was like, I'm going to change the world. I know I can. And so this is kind of my launch into activism, where I thought just by showing everybody the footage, they would change immediately, you know, or be horrified like I was. And this is kind of where my angry activism started, where I was like, oh my God, these people don't care. Like, my own family, what's wrong with them? They don't care about this. Right. So I would like protest my parents for having milk in the fridge. I'd be like, not your mom, not your milk. And I would run upstairs and cry when they would like have an animal on the table. And it really was bad. And these were, I moved out a few years ago, but throughout like college, it was like I would go back and visit, and then they would be eating animals, and it was really, really difficult. But the way that I started, I think, my journey into film and that form of activism. So I was studying journalism and media at Rutgers University in college, and after going vegan at 18, I guess it was like my freshman or sophomore year of college, and I decided every project was going to be in some way, shape, or form about animal rights. So I was doing a ton of activism. I was going to slaughterhouse vigils every other week at like 5 a.m. before classes. I was trying to do rescues where I could. And I was documenting the conditions just on like my little DSLR camera. And I was in a class about documentary filmmaking. And this professor was like, okay, each of you guys have 3 months. You have to make a short documentary. So I was like, oh gosh, what should I do this about? And at the time I was experiencing a lot of like anger and a lot of just hard feelings about being a vegan activist and not having a lot of people that understood me. So I made a film called The Butterfly Effect, which basically talked about how vegan activists are just kind and compassionate people that are seen in society as like annoying or militant, and how people tend to shoot the messenger before they listen to the message. That was what the film was about. It was like my first time making like a short documentary. And at the time it was 2019, and I went to an animal rights march in New York, and I was wearing a shirt that said Newark Animal Save. And that was the group that I would go to the slaughterhouse vigils with. And this guy named Jordan from Cave Light Films came up to me, and we started talking, and he was like, what does your shirt say? Like, what's that all about? So I was telling him, listen, we give the animals water. We, you know, document the conditions. We rescue where we can. And he was like, I want to come and film it. He goes, I'm a filmmaker. I've worked with Travel Channel, Food Network. I, you know, make a ton of films. I was like, that would be great. Like, please, we want to get more eyeballs on this. So one morning in September, he comes and films this vigil. And it just so happened that morning, the truck driver started to engage with us. So there was this level of controversy and conflict. The driver was not happy we were giving the animals water. And it was a heated interaction. And also it showed light onto the conditions these animals were in. I mean, these cows and sheep are on these trucks covered in feces. There's downed animals, and they consider this quote unquote halal, which is supposed to be like the more humane, whatever you want to call it. And it's like the worst conditions you could possibly imagine. And so he made this film. It ended up getting 20 million views. It went completely international. It's wild. Yeah, it's called The Save Movement. If you look up The Save Movement by Cave Light Films, it'll come right up. It was on Now This, and that's really how it like got pushed out and how it went viral. Vice reached out to him. I mean, it was really crazy. So it showed me while I was in college just the power of film and how we can reach so many people with documentary work and with film. So I graduated into the pandemic in 2020. And I reached out to Jordan and I was like, what are you doing this summer? There's really nothing going on and nothing to do. Nobody's hiring. He goes, why don't you come and intern with me and we'll work on some projects. So we made a film called The Fight to Ban Live Animal Markets, which was about how everybody was pointing the finger at China for the COVID pandemic because they're like, oh, wet markets there, blah, blah, blah. And we were like, well, what about the wet markets in New York City? There's over 80 of them that nobody's talking about.
Wow.
So yeah, so we made a film called The Fight to Ban Live Animal Markets that got 10 million views. Then we made 5 other ones since then. And I mean, I was a producer, also editor. And so that kind of gave me the skill set when I started editing my own videos through working with Jordan. And we're still very, very good friends, but it just got to a point where I couldn't handle my own podcast and YouTube and all the activism I was doing and working with him. So now I work for Generation Vegan, formerly called Million Dollar Vegan.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, tell us about that's Gen V. We would know them as, wouldn't we?
Yes. So Gen V. Gen V is an incredible organization. I love them. I love the team. I love the work that we do. I started working with Gen V back in April. And we are an educational platform that uses film, uses social media, pressure campaigns, food drives to create impact. So I am on the marketing, social media end of things where I work on educational films. So I do shoots here in New York. I interview different doctors, activists, researchers to help basically educate people about veganism and animal rights from all different perspectives, from the environmental side of things, the health side of things, and the animal rights side of things. And we also work on pressure campaigns. Many people might know us for the million-dollar campaigns where we will reach out to a celebrity, a president, the Pope, and we'll
our
offer
prime
them-
minister.
the prime minister
offered it earlier this year, wasn't it?
Yep. Rishi Sunak, we offered £1 million to, for many, we change it depending on who it is. But for example, this most recent one was to add a plant-based category to the Earthshot Prize. So we actually won this campaign. We are in talks with Earthshot, and it just goes to show how keeping the pressure on, how by pressuring them on social media, pressuring them in person, we showed up during Earth Week at the Plaza Hotel in New York City to demand that they add this plant-based category. It's like, how can you address climate change and the food, how can you address, you know, environmental concerns without addressing the food system? So we are now in talks with Earthshot, and we are nominators. So we're able to nominate plant-based companies to win the million pounds that they offer. But yeah, so we offered the Pope $1 million. Dollars. We offered President Trump $1 million to make America healthy again, you know, that kind of thing.
But that went down like a lead balloon.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, it gets people talking. And while, you know, he didn't accept our offer, it gets media attention. And
it's the attention.
Yeah. And
I mean, no one's expecting the Pope to suddenly say, right, the whole Catholic Church has got to go vegan overnight. But it's just getting the column inches or views and clicks, isn't it? That's it. And raising awareness.
Exactly. Yeah. So Gen V is incredible because they allow me to do activism full time. So, you know, I can tell them, hey, guys, I'm going to go storm a runway later. I'll see ya. And they're like, hey, bye.
So you said earlier that about your dad isn't vegan, but he might now be questioning that. What did your friends and family think about it when you made the decision to go?
So I have to say, all in all, they were very supportive, but it comes to a point where I don't just want their support. I want them to change, and I want them to understand why I'm vegan. You know, people always say, you do you and I'll do me. Don't push me into doing anything. But if there's a victim at the other end and animals are suffering and being killed, it's not just you do you. Like, your actions are causing pain on others. So that's why I'm not okay with you eating meat.
Yeah.
And my grandfather is like really someone that does not understand at all where I come from. And him and I go at it a little bit, but he's 83 years old. And so, I mean, he tells me all the time, don't try to change me. I'm not changing, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, listen, I can tell you what happens in these industries. And if you choose to continue to support them, then that makes me see you a little differently. That's concerning to me.
That's a good answer.
Before about like friend, how our own friends we think are really compassionate and empathic, and then they still eat meat. So how can they be?
Right, and it's really interesting because when I was going through, I mean, I've been an activist for almost 6 years now, and in the beginning, you know, where I was doing other types of actions, grocery store disruptions. I mean, I would literally go into grocery stores and hold TV screens of animals having their heads cut off and do speak outs. And my friends and family that had known me for many years, they were like, who is this? Like, what is she doing? They thought I was crazy. They thought I was insane. Now that I'm making headlines and now that I have a film that I'm in, my own podcast, which is gaining more notability and success, now everybody all of a sudden wants to be my friend. I'm like, I know who was in my corner throughout all those times, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you're not vegan yet, I don't know. I don't really want to talk to you.
I want to talk to you, but it won't be a very good ending.
Well, I'm like, step into my office. I'm like, we have some work to do with you before you can be my friend.
Take a seat. This is going to take a while. Fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds intense. I get it. It sounds like I'm extremist and militant, but when you've seen the things that I've seen, it would be weird if I wasn't.
There's nothing better than a hunk of prime Labrador steak, wonderfully marbled. And that is almost entirely dependent on how it's produced. Elwood's Organic Dog Meat has complete control of this entire journey. So I'm here at Elwood's Farm to find out a little more about it.
Welcome to Elwood Farms.
Thank you very much, Elwood.
I hear you do a bit of barbecuing.
I do, a little bit of barbecuing every now and then, yes.
From a chef's point of view, consistency is key for everything.
It doesn't matter if it's a Rottweiler ribeye, a Pyrenees mince, or a lab sirloin.
You can always tell when the dog comes from a place where it was well reared. And every step has to be right, doesn't it? Oh, you should see these guys. So, from an Elwood's point of view, there's complete traceability.
Absolutely. Unrivaled traceability, so it's fine.
Every single piece of dog meat?
Yeah, from pup to farmer's market.
Everything the dog's been fed?
Everything about it.
For each dog?
Yeah. Only Marks and Spencer's and Whole Foods do this.
Where else can people order from?
From ElwoodDogMeat.com. That's ElwoodDogMeat.com.
For top quality meat from dogs for people. Meat that's local, sustainable, and humanely harvested. There's only Elwood's organic dog meat.
They seem pretty friendly, don't they? It's more responsive to me than my kids, to be honest.
Obviously, you've been vegetarian for quite a long time before you went vegan. But did anything change for you physically or mentally when you made that change?
So I did things very gradually. So I would cut out one thing at a time. And so I tried going vegetarian at 13 after I saw the pig livestock truck. I didn't mention that before because I failed. And okay. Everyone around me, my parents were supportive, but my one friend had her mother would tell me all the time, you're too skinny, you need to eat protein, and almost like would put these things in my head to make me think that I was feeling weak or that my iron levels are low. And so when you start thinking these things, you almost like it's placebo, you start to feel it. And so I just didn't really know much about health or nutrition. I mean, I was 13, and also Instagram wasn't really a thing where you could like find nutritionists and doctors posting about this stuff. Like there wasn't a really clear answer for me because I didn't know too many vegans back then. So I tried going vegetarian at 13, and then that's why I just started cutting things out slowly over time. I did it for about a year. And then at 14, I ventured back into the evil behavior. And so I would say, did I experience anything? I guess with the cutting out the dairy, especially, I noticed clearer skin, less inflammation. I noticed that just spiritually, I felt more connected. Like I think, you know, a lot of people don't realize that when they're eating these animals, they're eating the violence, the fear, the suffering, the cortisol, and the hormones that these animals have in their bodies when they were killed. And it's terrible. And it manifests in your body in various ways. And so by not consuming that fear and that violence anymore, I did feel more clear-headed. I felt like I had more energy. And yeah, ultimately finding the replacements, just going vegan is all about switching your brand. It's about finding different milks that come from plants. There's so many options. It's about finding the vegan cheeses that you like. And I don't even really do a lot of the vegan meats. I've almost like lost my taste for it. I mean, once in a while I'll have like the Impossible chicken nuggets but it's rare. It's like, I tend to stick more now to whole foods, plant-based. Like I love lentils, chickpeas, curries, soups. I'll go to the farmer's market on a Sunday and just pick up a bunch of different vegetables and make some type of soup. I love mushrooms and just really like appreciating vegetables and fruits for the flavors they have, as opposed to like frying everything. And I don't know. I try to keep it simple.
Mm-hmm.
So on that, what's your favorite vegan product? It doesn't have to be a brand. Like you say, chickpeas, mushrooms, but you know, what's your favorite thing?
My favorite thing
or brand, whatever.
This is hard. I'll name a few. If I'm going for like a dessert and I'm really just craving some type of chocolate, or I really love Truppo Treats. They have vegan Kit Kats. I think they're coming out with vegan Twix bars. They're really good. And super yummy to just eat. I love Oatly ice cream. Van Leeuwen's is a ice cream place here in the city that has half their menu is vegan and their ice cream is amazing. But if you're asking like, what's my favorite go-to is probably like a curry with potatoes, carrots, tofu over white rice and like a little spice.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. You can't go wrong with a curry really, can you? What about non-food? Any particular thing that takes your fancy at the moment?
Yeah, well, most recently what comes to mind is Save the Duck, which is a coatwear company. I'm actually wearing one of their little coats right now. And they use plum tech inside instead of down feathers. And they're super warm, super cute. I mean, being that we're going into winter here in New York, it's important to bundle up. And so Save the Duck is a really, really great coatwear company. And then as far as like makeup and cosmetic stuff goes, I really love Elf is great. I love Pacifica. Onalu moisturizer or Skin Fix moisturizer is good. It's just Skin Fix is a little expensive, so I don't always buy it so often. And I also really like Born This Way foundation is nice if you're going for that look, you guys.
Is that named after the Lady Gaga song?
I think so.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
Too Faced, I think. Wait, no. Born This Way? What is it called? Who knows? It's good.
Okay.
Find it at any drugstore. You know, sometimes if you're not going on to the Sephora store and willing to spend $100, you just go to the CVS or Duane Reade, whatever you have nearby, and you Walgreens, you get your Wet n Wild or your Elf. And I just stick to those brands because sometimes it's like, it's a nightmare going into these stores and then having to like look up every single product you pick up. And is that company owned by L'Oreal? Do they test in China? Yeah. It gets a little confusing. And so people don't realize that vegan and cruelty-free don't always mean the same thing. It's two different things. And sometimes there's cruelty-free products that aren't vegan, which is super weird to me to begin with. But then also sometimes there's vegan products that are not cruelty-free. So you just have to
check. Which is why we just do what we can, don't we? As vegans, we just do as best we can with what's in front of us.
That's why I just try to stick to the brands that I know and that I like and that I work with. And it was a process, you know. It's like I had a pair of leather shoes and, you know, while I guess I wasn't necessary, I already had the shoes by wearing them. I'm not contributing to the ongoing problem. But what I was doing is I was promoting the idea that it's okay to continue wearing a cow's skin. And it got to a point where I was volunteering at sanctuaries and I would look down at the shoes and I'm like, there's just, I don't feel comfortable wearing these anymore. So a few years into eating a plant-based diet, I donated my leather shoes. And now I have these really cool boots that are made from pineapple leather by Moo Shoes, is a great vegan shoe store down here, which I love.
Wow.
Well, I've heard of banana leather, mushroom leather, now pineapple leather.
Pineapple leather.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they haven't got the spiky bits on the outside, though.
They don't exactly look like a pineapple, although that that might be a trend we could start here in New York.
Yeah. With the leafy bit poking out the front.
Yeah, then people are going to be like, yeah, she's really a vegan. Look at her.
She's so vegan.
She's so vegan, it hurts.
So vegan. It would as well, with pineapples on your feet. Anyway, so what advice would you give someone who's thinking about going vegan?
So there's a few...
Like your dad. Your dad comes to you.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, where do I begin? Where do I start with him? Well, if somebody's thinking about going vegan, first and foremost, I would recommend watching these three films, which I'll name, because knowing the information is the most important part. People are going to come at you in all different directions, ask you a million questions, try to get you to stop being vegan, and you have to know the facts and know the information. The three films that really changed my life, one was Earthlings, which is free on YouTube. It just goes through the standard practices of how animals get to our plates. The second one is Cowspiracy, which talks about the environment. And the third one, if I had to choose between the three, it would be What the Health. What the Health is a great one, and it got me looking into how these industries lie to us and how they actually want to keep us sick. It's financially viable for them to have people in the hospitals and have people sick and to force people to continue eating these products, right? So What the Health is a really great film, and it follows Kip Anderson, this filmmaker / journalist who goes to some of the top organizations such as the American Heart Association, the Diabetic Society, the Cancer Society, and he asks them, why do you promote a predominantly meat-based diet when you know that these products are causing people to be sick? And the film follows their answers and the rationales that they try to come up with. And it's really, really well done and really good. So yeah, those are the three films I would recommend for people that are looking to go vegan. And then it's just a matter of trying out different brands. Don't get discouraged if you pick up a vegan cheese from the supermarket and you don't like it and you can't eat it. Just try a different one. There's so many options. Just like, you know, there's animal products that you've probably had that you're like, ew, I don't like this. This is disgusting. There's probably going to be vegan products as well that you're like, this just doesn't taste good to me. So continue trying out different things. Learn some recipes. I don't consider myself the best cook, honestly. So you don't have to be a good chef to be able to do this. I promise you. There's really cuisines that are very easy to make vegan, or if you go to a Thai food place. If you go to like a Chinese restaurant and just get like a bunch of steamed vegetables in a brown sauce over rice is super easy. Nowadays, you could even go into like bars and pubs, especially in the UK, and they'll have an Impossible or Beyond Burger or a black bean burger, and just really start reading ingredients. Just at the end of any packaging, it'll say in bold what the allergy is in it, and they have to legally put meat, dairy, or eggs. They have to make it known that that's in there. So it makes it super easy just to look, go to the bottom and look to see if that's in there. And yeah, that's my advice for somebody that's trying to go vegan. Really, just watch Earthlings. People act like going vegan is so hard. It's like, what's hard is what the animals are going through, not the fact that you would just have to move your hand to a separate aisle in the grocery store. Like, it's not that big of a deal. But my advice to vegans is to get a support system. Make friends with other vegans. I can't stress how important this is, because it can get lonely out there in the world. And if you're constantly just up against everyone, from your family to your close friends to strangers, people that will come at you from every different angle, it can get discouraging and really hard and isolating. So if you start getting into activism and make vegan friends, whether it's just going on a Facebook group or connecting on a Discord chat, or even starting your own activism in an area that you live, it can be, I think, a huge element in making this journey successful for you, because it's really hard being a vegan in a non-vegan world. But when you have that support system and those friends, you don't feel so lonely anymore.
Yeah, I think the social thing is I completely agree with you, but then you've also got the perfect vegans who are going to attack you as well, and that sucks.
That's just ridiculous. So, I always say when vegans attack me for things, I just say, please do it how you see fit. If you don't like my style of activism, please then use this to do your own form that you find more effective. Yeah. I don't think that there's a wrong way to do activism. I think by doing nothing, that's the wrong way to do activism. Like, we need voices in all different ways. We need the angry vegans. We need the softer approach. We also need the educational approach. We need filmmakers. Yeah. We need artists. We need them all. So, I just don't even give those vegans the time of day, because it's such a waste of energy. And it's like, you're sitting on your keyboard typing all of this. Oh, like, Jamie, I don't like what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, then what are you doing? Why don't you go out and do it the way that you see fit?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just immersing yourself in all of it, watching the YouTube stuff, watching, you know, all the social media stuff, and just, you know, educating yourself as much as you can.
Exactly. Yeah, I read Earthling Ed's ebook, which is just free online, and it goes through all the excuses meat eaters have. So what actually helped me the most was just becoming super educated about how to respond to people, because then I didn't get so worked up and flustered. I was just like, hit me with what you got. Like, I know what you're going to say 5 minutes before you say it. Let's go. Yeah. So that helps a lot, because I'm like, I strategically, I put people in my corner, and then it's just like, you know, the facts and the science are on our side. So it's really not hard. It's just like, let's have a conversation about it. I've heard every excuse in the book.
Right, I actually seriously had the pig on a desert island the other day. Someone said to me, but what if? And I went, when was the last time that happened to you? And they went, well, yeah, but what if? Stop it.
It's ridiculous.
Just stop.
Yeah, it but gets anyway. Really frustrating. Sometimes I feel like a broken record, but at this point I'm like, I have the responses. Like to that, I would ask questions back. So I'd be like, well, what is the animal eating that you're planning on eating? Because it's like, once you kill that animal, then you're out of food.
You're dead. That's what I do. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you haven't even got a fridge if you're on a desert island. So it's like one meal, isn't it?
Yeah, because after that, it's going to go off. 24 hours, haven't you?
Yeah.
It's just not very smart. And I think a lot of people will use this argument as a means to explain how, well, what about people that are in food deserts, or what about people that are living in places that maybe they can't sustain a plant-based diet at the moment? Well, we're not necessarily talking to those people, right? We're talking to the people that can make change now, and the people that have the ability to. And so I really find it disrespectful and inappropriate for people to use others' excuses to justify their own behavior. It almost like pisses me off, because I'm just like, you're seriously using like somebody that's in a situation like that to try to justify why you shouldn't be vegan? Seriously?
Yeah,
exactly. Just because they can't be vegan, I'm not even going to consider it. You're like, what sort of an argument is that?
Yeah, nonsense. It's I call them right out on that BS. It's ridiculous.
Okay, awesome. So, you said you're in New York City. You've got dozens of vegan venues and restaurants at your fingertips. Have you got a favorite?
Oh yeah, at the moment my favorite is a Nixie. So Chef Guy Vakin, he's incredible. He has, I think, 5 vegan restaurants. He's got Beyond Sushi, Willow, Anixi, which is a Mediterranean place, which is my favorite currently, and Coletta, which is like this Italian trattoria. It's awesome. But there's also some other great ones like Planta, which is popping up in various states in the U.S., and it's really good. It's a mix of like Asian style foods. They even have vegan sushi there and udon noodles with truffles. It's amazing. And also I really like Lady Bird for a good vegan brunch. And I just went to this place called Itero in the East Village, which is where I live, which was delicious. There's really no shortage. I mean, in major cities like New York, LA, Miami, like you are completely set. But I will say, even when I go to Indiana or Ohio or random places to visit family members, it's like I figure it out. It's really not that hard. I mean, I remember even like 5 years ago, how about 10 years ago when I was or more than 10 years ago when I was 13, I still managed to figure out food items. You know, even if you go to Walmart, they have a whole vegan section.
Wow, okay, that's good.
Target,
yeah,
it's great.
It's in the mainstream. Definitely.
Yeah, we're getting there.
A lot of progress.
It's only going to get more convenient, more accessible. I mean, right now we are at a time where our tax dollars literally subsidizes the meat and dairy industries at the tune of billions of dollars. So that's the only reason that meat is as cheap as it is. It's artificially low, and dairy too, because when you look at the amount of resources that goes into raising the animals, farming them, feeding them, and then killing them, it's absurd. Whereas like our tax dollars literally go towards paying the subsidies for that. When really, if we just put some of those subsidies towards plant-based farming, you would see healthy foods, greens, smoothies, salads. You would see that being so cheap, but they don't want that because they want to keep people sick. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It takes us back to what the health, doesn't it? It's, There's no profit in healthy people who live a long time, is there?
Yeah.
There we go.
Well, they better get ready. We're going to be around for quite a while, so.
That's very true. You
know, we've
got at least another 100 years on us.
let them die off, you know?
Yeah, that's it. We'll be the ones who are left.
Yeah. So talking about coming to an end, so to speak, we started talking about this question last year when we heard about the term dystopia, about us guys living in a world that's coming to a ever increasing end. So do you have any hope for the future, for us, for the animals, for any of this?
I do. I mean, I think with any form of activism, you have to remain optimistic. Otherwise, what's the point in fighting as hard as we do? Mm-hmm. I, in the past 5 years, have seen veganism, the word, even become more well-known. People knew what vegetarianism was, you know, 5-10 years ago, but didn't necessarily know vegan. And now people know what veganism is, for the most people do. And you see veganism being used in marketing. It's trendy. It's cool to some. And so we just have to keep getting this information out there, keep doing our undercover investigations, forcing people to watch it. I don't exactly know what the answer is to what is going to be that tipping point, but what's going to get us there faster is if people speak up and use their voices. Mm-hmm. And as we were talking about in the beginning of this podcast, looking at other social justice movements and looking towards how they were successful in achieving the goals that they set out. So we want to just reduce the suffering, reduce at the very least the numbers of animals this is happening to. I hope that this cultivated meat thing, where it's meat grown from the cells of animals, it's basically just, it's meat without having to kill anyone. And I hope that that's the future and that takes over, because if we can't get people to stop eating meat, then at least they can stop eating meat from animals.
That's a key thing. I think it's might not be for all of us, but if it means that animals aren't killed on the scale that they are, then it's a massive step in the right direction, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we're not here fighting for bigger cages or longer chains. If we have to take steps using those methods, then we will. But we're here to fight for animal liberation. We want freedom for all. Exactly. Because until all are free, none are free. And once we can learn to treat animals with kindness, I feel like the human part would come pretty naturally.
Yes. Love that.
What a quote.
Fantastic.
What a quote. I might tattoo that.
There we go.
Fantastic. So we talked at the start about what you've done recently, but what's next in your path to world domination?
Well, there's so many things. I have a billboard campaign across America that I'm working on, which shines light onto the horrors of dairy. So I worked with a local anonymous New York street artist here that he's a good friend of mine, and he designed these billboards that artistically kind of get the message across. And we have 4 different billboard designs showing each process in the dairy industry. So we have 1 on artificial insemination, 1 on the calf separation, 1 on like the milking and how they're you know, basically giving milk to humans, super weird, instead of their babies, and then 1 on the slaughter. And it's been really hard to get these billboards approved by these companies. In fact, I have a meeting with one of the companies tomorrow, because they had approved one of our designs and then we signed contracts, and then they just took their word back on it. And they're like, wow. No, you have to remove the knife from this. And I'm like, this is just the standard process. Like, I can't remove it. This is what happens.
It's factual, isn't it? You're not making anything up. Good grief.
No, not at all. And it's so frustrating. So, yeah, working on that, trying to get those approved, and going to be doing some video stuff on that. Gen V, we have some upcoming projects. I'm working on a documentary with them. And I'm also launching a new podcast soon, which I will be saying more about in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, what a teaser. Brilliant. Okay. Awesome. That sounds great. The billboard thing, it's kind of what we're up against on a perfect example of what we're up against, isn't it? Because we want to tell people about what actually happens, and yet people won't let us tell people. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't put slaughter footage out without a warning on Instagram or you know, in case it upsets people. But like, you're the one who's causing it, so why you should see what it is.
That the point?
Yeah, that's It's just incredible, isn't it? So frustrating. Oh,
and it's not just with these billboard companies. I've been dealing with this for the past, you know, 6 years where I try to post a video on TikTok and they ban my account at like 15,000 followers. They're like, nope, we got to take you off of here. You're being too truthful. You know, and I'm like, oh my God. So I just start another account, but then you're starting from square one. And then I get shadow banned and yeah, all of this stuff. And I'm like, these billboard companies are more than happy to put up false messages from the dairy industry. That one of the billboards I just saw the other day said milk hydrates better than water. I mean, that is so dangerous to say because we need to drink water. Our bodies are what, 98% water, and you're telling people to drink cow breast milk. You're saying that that is more hydrating than water, than H2O. It's like, I mean, someone should sue. That's insane. And then, recently they have these like, they're obviously very threatened by what's going on, especially the dairy industry, where you're starting to see them putting out ads that say, quote unquote, real milk, natural milk. They're starting to say that there's some milks that actually help the environment. It's a load of lies. I mean, and the billboard companies put this stuff out.
Yeah. I saw the one, what was the, is the actress? Is it Aubrey Plaza who did anti not cow milk advert, didn't she? That was just absolutely insane.
Yep. She sold out to the dairy industry, and Queen Latifah did the other day as well.
What?
Mm-hmm.
No way.
Yeah.
Dear idea.
They're trying to use, this is what happened. I mean, look at the Got Milk campaign, you know, back in the 90s where they're using celebrities to try to push these products on people.
That's it. It's just going to keep coming around. As soon as they feel threatened, they'll just roll out the money and buy some people, won't they?
Well, that's why we need to speak up. We need to speak up and fight back louder and harder than ever, because they are coming at us hard, and the only difference is they have billions of dollars to use, and we're just going off of the little bit of funding that we get. So
that's it. And they've been established for years and years and years, haven't they? That's the thing. They have industry associations, lobbying firms, and everything.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think that's why we need to just try every different angle. So that's why we're doing the billboard stuff. Gen V just did a billboard campaign in the UK, actually, this past summer, which said every 10 hours, we take as many lives as World War II took in 6 years. So with that, and it showed pictures of farm animals on there. Mm-hmm. And so that means that every 10 hours, 6 million animals are killed.
Yes.
Wild.
It's insane. Yeah. Absolutely insane.
Crazy.
And that's controversial to people. I'm like, it's just
factual. This is the thing. It's just facts, but people can't handle it.
Mm-hmm. And if you can't handle it, and if you're not okay with it, and if you can't watch slaughterhouse footage, you most certainly should not be buying those products.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Okay, Jamie, we've taken up loads of your time. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been really interesting. Great chat. Thanks so much. And look forward to seeing your future projects.
Thank you so much.
if you get tickets for Cannes Film Festival, just, you know, don't forget us, will you?
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for having me. If people wanted to go check out some of the work I'm doing, they could go on Instagram to It's Jamie's Corner, ITSJAMIES Corner. You could go to itsjamiescorner.com. My podcast is also on there, and I really appreciate your time.
That was pretty damn interesting, to be fair.
Yes, really good. I like that. Yeah. She's got great energy for a young person, I suppose. But then maybe that's because she's young. But great energy. Great energy to be.
Energy than me or you.
Yeah, but just the things that she's involved in, and the activism, the working for vegan organizations. I mean, that would be just fantastic, wouldn't it? I would love to.
That would be great. I love my job, but to be working in in that sector would be amazing.
Yeah, come on, Gen V. If you need an official podcast, what are you playing at?
Yeah, if only. No, Jamie's awesome, and I thought it was nice to have a good conversation over why she hadn't come on before.
Yeah,
at the beginning, I like that. I like that a lot. And that's you know, any level of activism, anything like that, takes some nuts.
Oh really, yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, and to have done that, and to have, you know, to go and rescue an animal, to do any of those things, you know, it's good. But to have gate crashed an event like that and got in the media is another level. So fair play to her.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. I mean, that was absolutely global. It was everywhere. That, like, on all the news sites and everything. Absolutely fantastic. Great bit of activism. Yeah. That just by walking along holding a sign. Fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say, but it moved on. Jamie said at one point about, you know, the amount of things that can go wrong, and mentioned holding the sign upside down. And I was just thinking, that would so be me. You'd have just got through everything, and you walk out, strutting and stuff, and you've got the sign upside down. Oh, you cock.
Yeah, that's it. You never get a second chance at that, would you? You'd always be, look at that idiot holding the sign upside down.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, absolutely brilliant. She's a legend. She's really good.
Yeah, fantastic. And as she said, check out her Instagram. We'll link to it in the show notes, where you can find links to all of her activities, such as YouTube channel, podcast, activism, etc., etc.
Yeah.
So yeah, hope you enjoyed that. And
we did.
Yeah, we did. And we'll speak to you next time.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Thank you so
much. Like, share, subscribe, and leave us a review. Only a good review, because like that. One of the podcasts I listen to have recently won the Gold Award at the British Podcast Awards. So that would be really good if we could do that next year, if somebody could nominate us. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Good to end on a joke.
So if you want to get in touch, then find us on all the social medias at How I Vegan Podcast. And if you want to email us, then
if you're on email, send it to howiveganpodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.